What would you do if you got scammed? Would you suffer in silence, or would you do something about it? Well, I got scammed once, and this is the story of what I did. I'm Justin Sales, the host of The Wedding Scammer, a true crime podcast from The Ringer. And for 7 episodes, we're hunting a con man, a guy with a lot of aliases, a guy who's ruined a lot of weddings. And with the help of some friends, I just might be able to catch him. Listen to The Wedding Scammer on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit JiffyLube.com. This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on cars.com.
I need support staff to clear the room.
Stand up and walk now.
Hello and welcome to The Watch. My name is Chris Ryan. I am an editor at TheRinger.com. And joining me in the studio, he's also moving to 2025. It's Andy Greenwald!
That was a good one.
It sucks. So today, Andy and I are having just a ton of fun with each other. Mm-hmm. And it's just a lot of laughs, a lot of goosing one another about mm-hmm. the state of Hollywood. One of the things we're talking about today, Andy, is many of our beloved, most anticipated shows mm-hmm. of 2024 moving to 2025 due to labor slowdowns and all mm-hmm. that stuff. And 2023 has been a mixed bag, I think.
Yeah. You mean like personally or?
I've enjoyed myself. I've also yeah. had some tough times. It's just like everybody else. Don't you hate knowing 2024 is going to suck though?
Like it is kind of wild.
Yeah.
Sitting here just watching everybody clear out 2024 so we can really focus on what matters most to us, electoral politics.
Do you think that's part of why some of these things are like, you know what? We don't really want to air during the summer of 2024.
No, they want to air in 2025 when America will be ready to heal again.
That's right. That's right. When we all become like the Wall-E robots that are just...
I feel like HBO, and we'll talk about this, and moving some of the things, they're like, well, on the downside, like we won't air White Lotus in 2024. On the plus side, in 2025, the word white is in the title. So that might be popular. Right?
Well, that's two audible Kaya cackles in 1 week.
Kaya knows the rules are different on Thursday.
Greenwald, great to see you. Great to see Kaya. We're in a new studio today, so the energy is a little bit different. We have a lot of natural light pouring in.
It's really interesting.
So we've opened up the floor plan on us.
We're usually in a small, dark warren, which is where we belong.
That's where I like it.
But today, that is true. Kaya can attest to this, that often when I walk into the studio, Chris has it in almost total blackness.
Yeah.
Like Prince recording an album in 1989. It's like, is it a little dark in here?
I want my office to look like a mm-hmm. candlelit study.
Yeah, but you don't have the candles.
Right.
And then today we're in a studio that has the door, mm-hmm. as most rooms do.
Yeah.
This is a cutting edge podcast. But we also have a big picture window facing a corridor. And I imagine this is, were we Hoda Kotb and company, this is where we would host the Today Show.
Yeah.
And the fans would stand outside with their signs. People would like wave rubber chickens and then like have bottles of water and then pour the water on the chicken.
Yeah.
To celebrate their affinity for you and also for podcast bits we reference but haven't actually talked about in upwards of 2 years.
I've also like moved past boiling my chicken accidentally. If people were waving signs outside, yeah. Andy, do mm-hmm. you think they would say, Casey Bloys, DM me?
If they were here today, yes, because yeah. as we learned, and we're going to talk about this, that our friend of the pod and head of HBO, Casey Bloys, now has learned to just slide into people's DMs.
Yes.
And not engage an army of Twitter bots.
Let's just get right into it. So this week, Rolling Stone published a piece about some revelations regarding HBO Max programming head, Casey Bloys, employing the use of burner Twitter accounts to send feedback to television critics mm-hmm. who he disagreed with. Mm-hmm. In 2020 and 21, Bloys reportedly instructed HBO Senior Vice President Kathleen McCaffrey to have someone, in this case an employee named Sully Tamori, respond to critics from the account of a fictional Texas herbalist and mother named Kelly Shepard, who had four followers. This account sent messages to Rolling Stone's Alan Sepinwall and the New York Times' James Poniewozik, as well as, I believe, Vulture's Catherine Van Arendonk.
Yes.
Rolling Stone, this is a quote from the Rolling Stone piece. Okay. The messages are part of a trove of material being prepared for a previously unreported wrongful termination lawsuit filed in Los Angeles Superior Court in July by former HBO staffer Tamori against HBO, HBO SVP Kathleen McCaffrey, Francesca Orsi, HBO's head of drama, that's Francesca Orsi, sorry, as well as Abel the Weekend Tesfaye and two producers for The Idol. It's important to
this,
me.
This company's gratitude for that project only continues to grow.
It really is the gift that keeps on
it
giving.
It is.
Okay, this is a quote from Casey Bloys, who happened to appear in front of the media today in a previously scheduled appearance to do, I think, to talk basically about the 2024 slate. Mm-hmm. I don't think it was like an upfront. I think it was just kind of like a...
Yeah, I mean, HBO doesn't traditionally do upfronts. It was a meeting with the media at WBD HQ.
This is a quote from Casey. It's very important to me what you all think of the shows. When you think about that and you then think about of 2020 and 2021... I'm working from home and doing an unhealthy amount of scrolling through Twitter. And I come up with a very, very dumb idea to vent my frustration. Obviously, six tweets over a year and a half is not very effective, but I do apologize to the people who were mentioned in the leaked emails, texts. Obviously, nobody wants to be a part of a story that they have nothing to do with. But also, as many of you know, I have progressed over the past couple of years to using DMs. So now when I take issue with something in a review or take issue with something I see, many of you are gracious enough to engage with me in a back and forth. And I think that is a probably much healthier way to go about this.
This is weird because I have been involved in a spirited back and forth in my Instagram DMs with an herbalist.
Yeah, but that's actually more about like a personal health question.
That's because that's just about gut health. Which I've become.
I'm like,
yeah.
Nicotine lozenges are basically the same thing as vitamin C. Yay or nay?
And then you just Kelly? You just keep DMing until you get a yay. Well, I think that broadly, I'd like to think that we as Americans can agree on two things here. One, everybody went fucking crazy in 2020 and 2021, and Twitter and social media in general has broken us. Not excusing, which seems like, you know, I think it is what he said. It was sort of a silly way to lash out. I think what we could also take away from this is when this tracks with a person that we know, very passionate about his shows, very passionate about defending creative decisions that he and his team make.
Uh-huh.
Ultimately, though, the thing about this that I find sort of, it's funny, I think, is that I can't think of a least effective way to engender change in a person or in the world than Twitter.
Yeah.
You know, that's the funniest thing about it, let alone the fact that the tweets, the targeted tweets, were remarkably tame.
In the sort of spectrum of Twitter responses, yes, these would feel pretty constructive.
So reading from what we learned from the Rolling Stone piece, Catherine Van Arendonk from Vulture and New York Magazine took issue with the trench warfare flashbacks
in Perry Mason
yeah. season one. I also did. To be honest, I imagine that our AM to the PM co-host, Matthew Reese, is not listening to this podcast. Do you know he just closed his boat business?
No, why?
Yeah, we'll have to get him back on to talk about it. I was shocked.
Do you think the two stories are related?
I think we got to see how high this thing goes.
Yeah.
But anyway, so she was critiquing sort of snidely made a comment, like not snide, but like not direct. Basically, was just like, with access to a screener, can we please stop doing this sort of thing?
Yeah.
And I guess it was Kelly Shepard or one of her ilk responded like,
Texas's great herbalists.
Like, how dare you question the urn trauma of our greatest generation?
Yeah.
Something like that. Okay.
But it was funny because isn't the greatest generation supposed to be the World War II generation?
Well, not according to some herbalists in Texas and or the heads of HBO programming content. We're being light about this because I don't really know what else there is to say. Like, he is a friend of the podcast and someone that we've spoken to on and off the record and has been always pretty straightforward with us about his opinions about our opinions, and some really, really remarkable over-the-counter supplements that he sourced from Texas that have changed
your gut health. I have a very similar take that this is a bad look and probably a bit embarrassing for Casey and it's not that big of a deal. But I have also worked on stories about the use of burner accounts.
Yeah, you have.
And in my case, obviously, we were covering the then Sixers president, Brian Colangelo's possible, alleged, reported, I don't know why I'm using all these caveats, use of burner accounts. But those were specifically when commenting on the medical states of some of his players. Mm-hmm. It was really like the sort of biggest infraction there. Look, like, it's a bad look, but I don't know I don't think that necessarily there's going to be any changes afoot because of this.
Doesn't seem like it. I mean, by the way, we're not speaking on the merits of a lawsuit of which we just learned.
That's
yesterday.
Another thing is like, I don't want to be too glib about this. Yes. I don't know what deals with the lawsuit.
I think if you pull back a little bit, what is interesting to me, and at least my perspective on why even someone would be compelled to do this, is that until recently, I think, good reviews and good word of mouth were tantamount to currency for HBO in a way that I think that's not the case for other networks and streamers. The brand of HBO was quality, making things that you absolutely had to see, which translated into subscribers and subscriber fees, and the great game rolled on. We're in a very different universe now, as is HBO, and with some uncomfortable bumps along the way. But I think that might give you some insight as to why some, because that's always the thing that I was always a little bit confused by this too. I was grateful for it when I was a full-time functioning TV critic. I use that word functioning with intent.
Mm-hmm.
That the things that we wrote seemed to be of outsized importance to certain people. And
the
people
who made the things that you were writing about?
Well, no. I mean, I understand why a creator would be like, anyone who creates anything wants to be validated and wants it to be well-received. I understand that. But in terms of people at the highest part of the food chain on that side of it, like network presidents seem to care a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't always entirely sure why, since I don't know how much reviews move the needle. But I think in the case of HBO, for a long time, that was part of the fuel that kept them going.
So, you know, it's interesting. This is really only tangentially related to the issue at hand. But I have been thinking a lot recently. You know, you shared some really wonderful art criticism from the New Yorker magazine with me that I had yet to read. Who's the writer again?
Jackson Arn.
Yeah, and I thought that was...
Did you read those?
Really good pieces.
He's a really good writer.
I like the idea because I also know that I don't really do this. that, like, we return to, like, a place of more measured long-form criticism rather than 140 characters or 280 characters being, like, only a true inbred moron would ever like this episode.
Yeah.
/ this is the GOAT. You know, or whatever it is. I've never had my mind changed by Twitter. Like, I've laughed,
right.
I've cried, but I've never been like, you know what? That pithy little comment
undid
really makes me want to go back and
reconsider. This is definitely a digression, but the reason I started reading some reviews by the New Yorker's new art critic, a guy who I know nothing about other than I think he's a brilliant writer and critic named Jackson Arn.
Brilliant writer.
This is Chris's new thing is imitating me using my imitation of my father, which is, you know, really devastating.
Yeah.
But like, it's good. You know, I feel like
I got very defensive because Andy asked my late father, who used to be a movie critic, and he asked yesterday, are your dad's reviews anywhere? And my literal text back was, why?
Yeah, well, I was like...
because I was like, let me we're celebrate. Not reversing this bit. We're like,
oh, you thought that's what I was doing?
I was like, this is my joke.
I was celebrating. I was like, I bet Dez had like some heaters about like mid-90s stuff.
I was
curious what he thought of, specifically Scorsese's Age of Innocence. But anyway...
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to.
No, but please, this is Thursday. We do this on Thursdays. But I was really, really excited by these pieces, not just because I thought that the criticism was so sharp and interesting and made me want to go see exhibits that he was writing about when I'm in New York next. But one of the really nice things about it, I think it wasn't just that it is more measured, long-form, intellectually probing criticism, which I think we still like and wish there was a place for in the discourse. It was because he was reviewing things that have had not just years, decades, in some cases centuries, to settle in.
Yes.
What he was talking about so movingly was, and insightfully, I think, was a conversation, an ongoing conversation with a piece of art and culture that made it, the culture that it reflected, and then also the culture that continues to try and engage with it. And that is something that is absolutely absent from a social media dominated landscape, right? It's just perpetual now.
Yeah.
And it's a perpetual argument. So did I solve it?
No, I was even thinking about like a bunch of like the sort of more recent films that have come out, and a lot of the most probing, interesting criticism that I've read about Killers of the Flower Moon, mm-hmm. or The Killer, or a variety of movies in recent memory has been on Letterboxd. Mm-hmm. You know, I found a bunch of people that I like on Letterboxd, and I'm always really curious to see what they think of the films. And I sometimes need to like not read them until after I've talked about these movies, because they get into my head, which is really the sign of, I think, really thoughtful mm-hmm. engagement and discourse around a cultural object. So there's some other stuff coming that came out of Casey's. Oh, go ahead.
But I will also just say it is sort of a facile comparison for me to make, because one thing that an art critic at a legacy magazine like The New Yorker will not be doing is reviewing The Nevers, the sure. Joss Whedon series that lasted one season.
We all got bills to pay.
Right. No, I'm not saying he shouldn't do it. I'm just saying that like it is a different enterprise when you're like, this is a new thing.
Yeah.
I better just sort of check in with it, as opposed to, aha, finally the centuries-old conversation between Manet and Degas can be interrogated on a large
maybe
scale.
Maybe we should mm-hmm. table our discussion of White Lotus Season 3, mm-hmm. set in Thailand. Mm. So it's now going to not likely air until 2025, but maybe we should mm-hmm. shoot to talk about it in 2030.
When finally we can... I will leave the studio and walk into Bill's office and be like, hard pivot for the watch. We are doing everything on a five-year delay.
Yeah.
This is actually a great idea for a podcast. If we don't... This is a million-dollar idea. Kaya, why are you looking at job openings? Kaya's on ZipRecruiter right now. I'm just saying, if all of 2024, if we just do 2019...
Yeah, but the problem is we were around in 2019 doing that stuff.
We do a re-listen podcast about our podcast.
I bet you would do that before you would watch everything from 2019 again.
That's correct.
Other news that came out of this HBO mm-hmm. Dog and Pony show that Casey did today was that White Lotus is going to be delayed until 2025. Last of Us Season 2, likely not until 2025. Probably not what you want if you're HBO, since Last of Us was arguably one of the most popular shows of 2023. We've also got Stephen King, the Stephen King verse / It spinoff. Welcome to Derry, which is coming from the Muschettis. That is probably not going to come until 25, but...
And we've discussed this. That is unrelated to Derry Girls.
And unrelated to Castle Rock, which was on Hulu mm-hmm. and was about the fictional town in Maine that Stephen King set many of his stories. What we are getting mm-hmm. in the summer of 24, by all accounts, House of the Motherfucking Dragon.
Yeah.
Back up in this piece. Peace, love, and understanding.
That, and it, according to the reporting I read today, that at this media event, they saw a trailer mm-hmm. that they were not allowed to speak about, but that it exists, because
yes.
the show was in production and production was affected by the writer's strike. Although I don't know what that means entirely, because a lot of UK-based shows employing UK-based actors did not have to shut down.
But wouldn't it really just mean that the writer of... Whoever was show running House of the Dragon, probably...
Ryan Condal.
Couldn't?
He was definitely encouraged to not be a part of it.
Yeah.
I do remember that in the early days of the WGA strike. But he's back at work now, and so perhaps it's been back up for a few weeks.
It's going to be a strange next year. All jokes aside, I mm-hmm. do think that some things that we were hoping for, like Andor Season 2, mm-hmm. Last of Us Season 2, like some things that, obviously, like there are greater issues at hand mm-hmm. in the sort of... struggle to find a fair way to make this stuff. So if we have to wait for a year to watch fucking Andor, like, it's totally fine. It's just, I do think it'll be an odd year, both on the small and big screen, in terms of what stuff actually makes it to the screen. Already, Disney has moved a bunch of stuff to 2025. Mm-hmm. We've seen so many blockbusters get shuffled. We'll be talking later on about a big piece in Variety about Marvel. Mm-hmm.
But Joe Biden is going to have to wait 2 more years to find out what happens to the
entity. Yeah.
To the entity in Mission Impossible.
We're referring to the fact that it was reported that Joe Biden saw Dead Reckoning Part 1, and it really scared the Willikers out of him.
Do you think
about
that
AI?
But do you think for the previous 10 years he's been pro AI because he saw Her, the Spike Jones film?
Yeah.
And was like, that's charming?
Yeah. Or he was a big Miss Minutes fan from season one of Loki.
No one tell him about season two.
You telling me Miss Minutes broke bad, Jack?
It sounds nothing like Joe Biden. But
if it did sound like Joe Biden, would you be more enthusiastic about him?
No, I think that what you are
if
really...
If Joe Biden sounded more like Randy Savage.
That's like the Dark Brandon meme. That's what he sounded like. But I also think, Chris, and people listening to the podcast are probably with me on this, like, over time, I think you've really keyed into what the great impressionists, not Manet or Degas, I mean, like, from Saturday Night Live, you know, like Rich Little and Bill Hader, what they understand is that the truly great impressions...
You just have to believe.
They are as much spirit as they are accuracy.
Sure.
Right? And so when you do Joe Biden as Macho Man Randy Savage...
It's what I'm kind of longing for in a president.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know who you're talking about.
I want to take just a minute or two here to talk about the state of the Sheridanverse and the expansion and contraction of Yellowstone.
Yeah, I think you've earned this right. Kaya, can you open another tab with ZipRecruiter? I would like to... Go ahead.
Everybody outside this window is waving signs being like, sir, sir, please talk about...
They do have tears in their eyes.
Here's what's fucking rad about Taylor.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
So... Two new spinoffs. It was announced that Yellowstone will end, as everybody expected, next November with the final part of the fifth season airing. They've already aired part A, 5A. 5B is reported to probably not feature Kevin Costner, who is in a contract dispute mm-hmm. with the makers of Yellowstone, largely about how much time reportedly he was going to be spending on the set of Yellowstone and how he would balance that with the shooting of what he is hoping to be a trilogy, but is releasing at least the first two parts of Horizon next summer, which I'm honestly pretty jacked for. So Yellowstone will be ending in November. There are two new spinoffs announced, 1944, mm-hmm. which is along with, 1923 and 1873, I believe.
1881.
I get confused because of the Dark Guys show.
Deutschland 86.
It was 1883. I was right the first time.
Yeah, the Dark Show is 1899.
Yeah. 1883. All right.
What are we doing?
1883 with Tim McGraw and Faith Hill. Respect. Put some respect on that show's name. That was really good.
I watched that.
All of it?
I got it.
How many of them?
Happy ending, right?
Yeah, super. 1923 with Harrison Ford and Helen Mirren. I think that's coming back for another season. I'm not sure.
There's talk of that. I don't know if it's actually...
1944, okay. Which I gotta be honest, that sounds a little bit like Dub Dub 2. It sounds like Greatest Generation's coming through, so...
Not according to Nancy Shepard.
Color me pretty interested, though.
Anything else announced about it? Like,
I'm just basing it when it's set, if it's not about World War II, it's going to be really funny. If it's just about...
It's about the war at home?
Just about a gal who's waiting for her hubby to come home. I don't know. I mean, like, I bet Taylor Sheridan is setting this in World War II. What? Here's the best fucking news I've ever heard, though.
Okay.
This guy is just going to end Yellowstone.
Yeah.
He's going to start a new Yellowstone and call it 2024.
That's not true.
Yes.
It's just called... So the culmination of the years is just next year?
Yeah. Quote from Variety, featuring new cast members and locations with some crossover characters as well. 2024 is rumored to star Matthew McConaughey. And this is not a quote because this is just the straight shooter talking. I have a feeling this one's moving to Texas because Taylor Sheridan owns the Four Sixes Ranch in Texas.
Yeah.
Matthew McConaughey, great Texan.
Famously.
A possible gubernatorial candidate.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that he would be like, why don't I move to Montana? The brand is strong in the Lone Star State for him.
Wasn't there also like, and you said this, you've told me about this, I think, a particularly egregious would-be backdoor pilot for a Texas spinoff?
I believe it was the fourth season where Jimmy, one of the characters mm-hmm. of Yellowstone, is sent to Texas to like learn true cattle ranching.
Mm-hmm.
and you're like, oh, cool. Well, I'll see Jimmy in a spinoff show some other time or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they just do half of the season is just Jimmy in Texas.
And
eating some gal, veterinarian.
And they filmed that all on property that Taylor owns. The king stays the king.
Hey, man.
I guess my question is,
can you imagine being his accountant and being like, you fucking did what?
His accountant.
Are you serious? And just like a little tear goes down the accountant's cheek. Like, you mean I can write this off twice?
Can we do a meme where it's just the scene from the early in Wolf of Wall Street, a movie that I have now seen very recently and would love to talk about more, where it's like Leo in the diner in his suit, just eating eggs, and Jonah Hill comes up to him.
He's like, is that your car?
He's like, is that your car? Can you just put right on Leo, Taylor Sheridan, and then right on Jonah Hill, Taylor Sheridan's accountant?
So that's happening. And much like Timothy Chalamet in Little Women, I will watch.
Wow.
You know what I mean?
The bar is set pretty high because the last few of these that were announced, 1923 is announced with Helen Mirren and Harrison Ford starring on a television show for the Paramount Plus streaming service. Mm-hmm. There was a show, I don't know if you saw it, it was called Lioness.
Yes. Special
Nicole Kidman and Morgan Freeman on that show. And now this potential 2024 show with Matthew McConaughey. So what would 1944, like who would have to be in this show?
No, Matthew McConaughey's in 2024.
So who would have to be in 1944 for you to feel like the standard is being held high?
I'm not joking around when I say Tom Hanks.
Exactly.
And Tom Hanks was in 1883.
Oh, right. I forgot about that.
So like, let's get some Private Ryan up and running.
This idea is just so goddamn crazy. It's probably true.
Let me just say, he could do worse. He already fucking loves that time period.
Yeah.
Has he made several quite definitive works on it? For sure.
Mm-hmm.
Has Tom Hanks had a just absolute knockout hit in a while? He has not.
No.
Could he do worse? He could. This is my new podcast styling, asking rhetorical questions and answering them.
I should note that Chris is wearing a black tank top and standing up. This is his new style.
Yeah.
Man, you're really good at this casting game.
I'm really good at passionately hyping myself up for Taylor Sheridan shows.
Yeah.
Lawman Bass Reeves comes soon.
Have you checked that out yet?
I haven't checked it out yet. I will. Okay. Dennis Quaid is in that.
I love Dennis Quaid.
All right, you want to talk about Marvel? Was there anything else from today? I was going to ask, when I woke up and I saw this news, aside from the Casey stuff, like, but just all the like, and this is coming, and this is coming, and this is moving, but we're doing this. The little voice in the back of my head that casts Tom Hanks and Taylor Sheridan shows also said, I wonder if the SAG strike is winding up.
I can't say definitively whether there was any connection between these events, but I will say that from my own little voice reporting around town, which is talking to three people, there's a lot of confidence and optimism that the SAG strike will end perhaps as soon as this week. I have no insight, but there is a sense. And as everyone knows, like when people get, it doesn't take much for people to just run with stuff here and start to feel a little more bullish about the bleeding will stop. And now they can actually take a look at their schedules and see what's possible.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Okay, so we've spent a lot of time over the course of the last month doing air pressure checks on Marvel's tires because we've been driving the Loki car off the road. As is documented, I kind of enjoyed the last episode. You felt betrayed by that.
Yeah.
But then today, or actually just this week, I think it was maybe a day or two ago, Tatiana Siegel at Variety ran a huge piece called it's Marvel in Crisis, essentially, was actually called Crisis at Marvel. So my apologies.
Wow.
And I'm just going to go through some of the sort of bigger takeaways here. Mm-hmm. Is that okay? And we can maybe, yeah. I'm gonna stop at each place and get your temperature on this.
All right.
So it's a pretty epic takedown of the current state of Marvel, reiterating some things we know, that they make too much, the quality control is slipping, the VFX is terrible, and the fan fervor seems to have crested started to drop. Okay. The first half of the piece, I would say, or the first quarter of the piece, certainly deals with the fallout from Jonathan Majors' domestic violence charges. That is pretty much getting worse. That whole story with yeah. additional cases being talked about, mm-hmm. and
that it is going to trial.
Yes.
This is going to happen.
When you're talking about something like this, it seems pretty shallow to connect it to whether or not like a movie franchise is successful or not. But I'm just saying that because that's exactly what I'm about to do, because
yeah.
that's what sort of the piece deals with. But obviously there are things that are more important than whether or not fucking Kang is well executed in this series. That being said, there is some apparently internal debate about whether or not he either legally is going to be able to continue in this franchise, whether or not they want him to, mm-hmm. and whether or not creatively they think this is the right place to go. Because for as much as Majors' performances have drawn attention, creatively it seems like maybe the Kang thing and the multiversal thing is not quite working for Marvel.
Yeah, I think there were a couple things about this, and I appreciate you the clarification. I think that it's important to say that like we are talking about this in the scheme of Marvel's creative and yeah. corporate decision making, totally separate and apart from the more important human story that's actually driving a lot of this. There are some interesting perspectives on it in this piece. One was
I can give you the
I was going to give you the quote.
Yeah, you do it. You give me the hammer here.
Quote. Marvel is truly fucked with the whole Kang angle, which I'm screaming at here. It's the Kangle.
Yeah.
They are truly fucked with the whole Kangle, said one top dealmaker who has seen the final Loki episode. By the way, I'm sitting right across from that dealmaker right now.
Is it Kai or me?
There's only one of, it could be either of you, but only one of you just put Tom Hanks on the Paramount Plus service. So this person goes on to say, this person has seen the end of the finale of Loki and adds this, which I don't think we'd even considered. They haven't had an opportunity to rewrite until very recently because of the strike. I don't see a path on how they move forward with him. So the implication in this piece and in quotes like that are that Loki season 2 is running the way Loki season 2 was intended to run, which isn't to say that they didn't do a lot of stuff in post and move things around, but it suggests, at least in my eyes, that there was not some great rejiggering of the
yes,
first few
which
episodes.
Which was sort of what we had sort of suggested maybe in the beginning. So
yes.
It just shows you how much we know. But
it also, I think that was, I don't think we even paused because I was being just extremely negative about the episode as a whole. But my sense is that if it was we could toggle in or toggle out of this, it would be more of a glorified cameo.
Mm-hmm.
Victor Timely would have been a variant in one episode, but Victor Timely is running wild through the TVA in this next episode. He is essentially a cast member on this season of television. So the fact that, the confirmation that this is, they were just moving ahead, hoping for the best, fingers crossed, but that they were actually unable to even do the sort of creative reworking that they might want to because of the writer's strike. I guess what gives me pause there is, I don't know how much writers would have been involved in that decision-making, to be honest with you. Feige's
yes.
in charge once they deliver the stems, as they say. And Kevin Wright, the Marvel executive, and the various directors seem to have more creative say than in other television enterprises. But, this is they're just...
As a side note, I always find it interesting to read these behind-the-scenes pieces in sports, especially in the NBA, when it's like, oh, here's the sort of TikTok and behind the scenes of like the James Harden trade. Mm-hmm. James Harden, Philadelphia 76er player, just got traded to the Los Angeles Clippers this week. And you read these after the aftermath pieces, these post-action takes, and you can kind of start to kind of sort out like, oh, who's this piece benefiting most? And I know that maybe like...
Brian Curtis calls this the empty the notebook piece.
It's the
right?
empty the notebook, but the notebook is usually like tethered to this writer's source. Mm-hmm. And I don't know who Tatiana Siegel's sources are. It was interesting to read this piece, get to the end and be like, I don't know who comes off good in this. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
At the end, you're like, it seems like this is an entire $1 billion operation that's pretty much dependent on Kevin Feige being able to steer the ship, right? Like, and that it's not actually this dispersed parliament of creatives who are trying to make up like their minds about where to take this thing in decades into the future.
Right. No, they're just, they're having their retreat in Palm Springs and one guy in the corner is like, maybe Dr. Doom?
Yeah.
It's really notable. And we talked to Joanna Robinson about this when she was on the podcast to talk about the book she co-wrote, MCU. But it is worth revisiting that during the existence of these movies in this larger cinematic universe, the Thanos story is the one that everyone points to as like, ah, that was peak Marvel.
Nailed
that was
it.
Definitive. They nailed it. It's revealed in the book that that was really, the inclusion of the character was almost an inside joke for fans put in by Joss Whedon that then was from that one just wet noodle thrown at the wall. They built something rather methodically, you know, and then and then cast Brolin and then it all worked out.
Mm-hmm.
This is the opposite of that. They could have done anything. From the decades of Marvel storytelling, they decided on this character, they decided on an actor, and they decided to lay the groundwork precisely this way, primarily through television, through two seasons of Loki, and then in Ant-Man 3.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think that if, I'm not saying the obituaries of Marvel are going to be written anytime soon, but in talking about this, in reading the story, in listening to Joanna on Matt Bellamy's podcast, The Town, the fact that they were like, yes, the big villain for the next decade of Marvel storytelling is going to be a supporting character on a TV show and then the heavy in Ant-Man 3.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds insane.
Well, they continued with that. I guess the definition of insanity would be to do the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. So the other peg of this piece is that we're on the eve or the week eve of the Marvels coming out. Mm-hmm. This is the sequel to 2019's Captain Marvel. And this apparently cost $250 million to make.
Mm-hmm.
It is attempting to share the kind of spotlight with Brie Larson would be Tiona Paris, who plays Monica Rambeau, who we saw in, she was a supporting character in WandaVision in 2021. And Iman Vellani, who was seen in, she was Miss Marvel in 2022's Miss Marvel. So you're trying to essentially build a blockbuster that is 4 years, comes 4 years after its original film and is now sharing the spotlight with another two major characters who have been introduced in these TV shows.
Mm-hmm.
So they're kind of like still trying to play out that string of like, we're going to use the TV shows as equal playing grounds as the films, that we're going to assume that the Marvel customer is as engaged in episode 6 of Miss Marvel as they are in Endgame. I don't know. I mean, like that there isn't that need to like to make these connective.
It's crazy. And I do think, and honestly, I still would love the opportunity to talk to him someday. I think Kevin Feige, from all accounts, is a good faith producer and creative person who really falls in love with these artists and characters and wants to do big canvas storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
And like, nobody's trying to make something bad. Nobody's trying to prove a point. But, and this is absolutely a sop to our boss, like, is there a little like Belichick post-Brady here?
And is Downey Brady
In the sense that
or the there seems, Brady?
There's potentially, I understand for both career longevity, project longevity, and most importantly, cost control. There is there are a lot of reasons to talk yourself into thinking that what people love more than anything else is interconnected IP storytelling with characters and references and special effects that you recognize. Not, we love these six people and we love them playing these parts.
Mm-hmm.
I understand why you would trick yourself into thinking that, but the decision making from that assumption is really bizarre because let's just say Captain Marvel came out in what, 2019?
That's right.
I think you and I are on the record that we saw that movie. We definitely did. I think it is a pretty bad movie. I am on the record by saying I think that Brie Larson has many talents, but that she is kind of miscast in this part. None of that matters because the movie made like close to $1 billion, mm-hmm. didn't it? It is a huge, 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 huge hit for them. It is bizarre mismanagement of a potential new pillar of the franchise to wait 4 years for a sequel.
COVID aside, yeah.
I mean, I understand why is, if you just pull all the way back, and then intentionally depower a very powerful star. And I say that intentionally because one of the complaints about the character is that she's just can do anything.
She's Deus Ex Machina, right?
Right. But to say that she is not worthy of her own franchise, what she is one third of a supergroup that is not that super, quite frankly. No disrespect to the performers, but Tiona Paris's character, which I don't even remember what they're calling her, because that character has been called three different things in the comics. Mm-hmm. Is it binary? Is it, I don't know. I don't even know. And Ms. Marvel, which was a fairly delightful television show that was their lowest rated television show to date, you're taking away the one reason you had to make the movie in the first place and saying all of this is the same, nothing is particularly special, and you're going to continue to consume what we serve to you. And there's an arrogance to that, frankly, that I think is being communicated now to the viewing public. And I'll end with this point. First of all, I'll never end, but I will pause this rant with a point that I made before, which is it just feels unfair. It feels unfair to her. It feels unfair to their female-fronted movies that all of this is cresting right now in front of this movie, which is definitely not worse than Ant-Man 3 or The Eternals or a lot of the stuff that's come out in the last 2 years.
So there's another thing that's here about the Marvels, which is that it required a month of reshoots, which isn't that's particularly normal. Rare for Marvel. They often do weeks of reshoots, or they build in the budget in the idea of reshoots. But that Nia DaCosta, who is the director of the Marvels, mm-hmm. was already working on another film when Marvels was in post-production. When I read that, and when I read this next bit, which is about Blade, which is that, quote, Feige is pulling the plug on scripts and projects that aren't working. Case in point, the Blade reboot with Mahershala Ali signed on for the eponymous role of a vampire. Things look promising for a 2023 release date, but the project has gone through at least 5 writers, 2 directors, and 1 shutdown 6 weeks before production. One person familiar with the script permutation says the story at one point morphed into a narrative led by women and filled with life lessons. Blade was relegated to the 4th lead, a bizarre idea considering that the studio had a 2-time Oscar winner, Ali, on board. Amid reports that Ali was ready to exit over script issues, Feige went back to the drawing board and hired Michael Green, the Oscar-nominated winner, writer of Logan, to start anew. Regardless of like how you feel about Blade being taught life lessons or not, I really don't have like a particular affinity for Blade, so I don't really even know what Blade movie I want. My point is more, we may have hit a point where we like know too much about Marvel.
Yes,
And I was thinking about this today. I was on The Big Picture. We were doing a David Fincher draft. Mm. We were talking a lot about David Fincher. I've been thinking a lot about David Fincher, and he's notorious for this exacting way he works and doing dozens of takes of seemingly pedestrian scenes in his movies, of all manner of things in his film, to get the thing that he wants. And that's the rap on him. And so far, he has never missed, really. So people are like, that's a great way to work. We have not seen takes 1 through 88. We see the 89th take of Ben Affleck and Rosamund Pike meeting up in a bookstore or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I don't hear about why he didn't like those 89 takes or 88 takes. You know, we don't know about what Rosamund Pike did wrong or whether or not the line wasn't working. And my point is really more that they're in a bad zone right now where they are leaking from too many different places.
Right.
So that they can't make the mistakes that I think are probably a lot more common on a day-to-day, project-to-project basis in Hollywood than we know about.
Yes.
And without it being like, by the way, someone had a terrible fucking idea for Blade and they didn't do it. That's fucked up. I mean, it's not fucked up like this is a crime. It's just like, you can't kind of go through the process that you go through if it's going to always wind up being reported because people are like, this isn't working.
I think the key difference in the comparison you're making is that David Fincher is one artist who knows what he wants.
Yeah, and then he makes Gone Girl
it's simply he knows. He's in charge of the movie and he knows. The sprawling multi-billion dollar industry that is Marvel is not being run that way. And I don't know how you could. You can't run a studio the way you make a picture.
Yeah.
As Mank might say in a David Fincher movie, you simply can't. And they're answering to too many different, masters is the wrong word, but they have to please a lot of people. But I think the most dangerous thing here now is that they are trying to please an audience that is fluid and not fixed in their minds.
But I also think that the audience is slowly becoming closer to like an NBA fan who is as interested in transactions as they are games. And I do think that there is like a beast that needs to be fed when it comes to casting rumors, production rumors, scheduling rumors, like all this stuff that surrounds it. And I like we're as much a part of that machine as anything else, where it's like, I don't know if other things that Hollywood does, like, I don't even know if early Marvel could have stood up to this level of speculation and this level of scrutiny. Like, there's probably, like, when you read Joanna's book and you read about the making of Iron Man, which is considered one of the great successes of Marvel, a lot of Iron Man was being made up on the set. Like, it could have gone a lot of different bad ways.
But also, when you're just, the stakes and the conversation are different when you're on the way up versus when you're on the top. And one thing that isn't talked about that often, because we're talking, in fact, instead about how well it all worked in the end, is how a lot of those early movies are pretty mid. They're fine, you know, like Thor. Okay, Thor's fine. Mm-hmm. Even, you know, the first Iron Man, I think, really works. Captain America, the first Avenger is charming, but they weren't what they are now, but also they didn't need to be because they didn't come, it's not just that they didn't come with the stakes and expectations, it's that they didn't cost so much.
Yeah.
And yeah. So we're viewing them all through this the prism of, boy, Sam Presti really put together a world championship team, which he never will do because he's always going
to
keep...
Well, that's the funny thing is that the addendum to the Blade reporting and this variety, like the last bit, is that now they are considering going back and making a $100 million version of Blade, which is like, what if we kept our draft picks?
Well, but there's two addendums, not addendum, but there's two pieces in this thing that are the takeaways. One, them saying... Maybe we're scaling this all wrong. Not everything needs to be, because the Eternals cost $250 million, which is absolutely batshit crazy. But so they're saying, okay, maybe we can make some smaller things at scale and that will make more sense for us. Because they, up till now, they were operating in a realm where they announce an Armor Wars TV show. They do a full writer's room and write what I believe to be an entire season of television for this Don Cheadle television show, and then decide, you know what, this is too expensive. This needs to be a movie. So they throw out everything they did and they're rewriting it as a movie. But what does that mean? That just means they're still spending upwards of $200 million for something that was sus to begin with. So if they are, in theory, saying we're going to spend less and, you know, I don't know, who knows whether that will make better product, but it might make more sustainable product, might make more consistently interesting or consistent product. But on the other end of this article, the other big piece of news that's been aggregated is what? That they are fully aware that they probably will need to just say Avengers Assemble again.
Yeah.
That they will have to call Downey and Evans.
And ScarJo.
And ScarJo and all of these people who have been exiled one way or another, whether for cost purposes, whether they didn't want to do it anymore, or whether they actually just killed the character.
They can get fucking board seats out of this if they were.
That's the thing. Do you think Nelson Peltz's takeover is hostile? Wait till you see Disney chairman Scarlett Johansson's reign of...
She's like Jonathan Levine.
I don't think people understand that
Jonathan
this would
Glazer,
be...
I'm sorry. Jonathan Glazer gets like $1 billion budget. Give it to Jonathan Levine too. I don't care.
For Zone of Interest too?
Yeah.
I don't think people are ready to have the conversation that this Avengers Assemble movie would be the most expensive movie ever made before they even shot in a frame of footage.
I know.
If they do that. But they also know that that's available to them. And I think it's baked into this idea that at the end of the multiversal storytelling is their movie version of the comic book story Secret Wars, which kind of crams all the different variants and things into one new universe going forward. And when you do that kind of story, yeah, Chris Evans can show up swinging Thor's hammer.
Yeah, I think the issue that they've also got, though, is that even the ones, Guardians is essentially over, or at least James Gunn isn't doing them anymore, and I assume they're over. Then you've got Thor, which seems to have diminishing returns as a Taika Waititi kind of like, let's just make it up as we go along project. Mm-hmm. So there's not really anyone present who is the reliable, let's bring Chris Paul in and just like, to dribble out
the clock.
I love
that we really just want to do an NBA podcast today. I could tell. I just kind of want to go back to your point about the leaking. Like, Marvel didn't leak for a long time.
I don't care if they get leaked on. You know, I mean, like, I love Joanna's book. It's not like I'm like, this is the problem.
Remember that drop, the LA leakers?
No, but we need to keep, like, Maggie Haberman away from the White House so they can do their work. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying, I wonder how many other, at various points in the history of Hollywood, seemingly like perfect shops had a lot of stuff behind the scenes where it's like, man,
all of them.
You can't imagine the fucking ideas that George Lucas had before New Hope was actually locked, you know?
That's all out there.
Yeah.
He had some really bad ideas. Like, all, like when Luke shows up and is just like, the only thing that makes sense in this galaxy is a flat tax. Like, people laughed him out of the boardroom. So he put that into the prequel trilogy. But the history of Hollywood is... two, much like there were two Englands in the show The Gold, there are two histories. There's the one that was, everything worked out on these movies. They were hits. And then there are people who worked on them and they were like, I cannot believe we got away with that.
Yeah.
That is always the story for any movie and any scale of mishap behind the scenes. One of the things that is weird, I think, at this moment, and this trying to make this conversation forward, to spin it forward a little bit, is I think that in previous eras of blockbuster rise and fall or studio dominance, and then when those eras end, is that like with empires, someone else, not Strikes Back, but like literal empires, someone else shows up and like pantses them.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, guess what? We're doing this now.
And who's doing that now?
And, you know,
Peacemaker?
Well, that's my question. In this moment, I guess the music analogy would be Nirvana coming out and then suddenly no one is playing hair metal at the Whiskey A Go-Go anymore. Like, that looks silly. Because of the consolidation in the industry and also just the sheer size, scope, and money involved in all of this, what is the competition? What is the alternative? And, you know, we can say, well, Jim Gunn's DCU is going to have a different vision. Sure. And as we've said before, I think it'll be good, both because I think it'll be creatively inspired because he's good at this, but also because it just won't have the baggage of 15 years of Marvel. They are starting over. But what else is there? And that, to me, as much as anything else, is why we are still going to be having this conversation after the Marvels in 6 months, you know.
Well, to be clear, we're not going to talk about the Marvels until 2029. You know, we're going to wait. Let it.
No, late 28.
Really sink in.
Late 28.
Why, are you busy early 29?
No, because we're waiting 5 years.
Oh, okay.
We're waiting 5 years. You're going to be canvassing for Lauren Boebert, I believe.
Canvassing?
Well, presidential.
Yeah.
In 28. Canvassing and vaping.
Yeah.
But that's when we'll talk about it.
Do you want to talk about bodies today or you want to wait till Monday?
But do you have any... I know we've been doing so much Marvel.
Oh, can I make one more? I'll make one more really strained sports metaphor.
Okay.
Joe Lacob, who owns the Golden State Warriors, was widely derided for his idea of building a bridge to the future, that they were going to have a championship caliber team in the present and also be building... the next version of that team on the bench by drafting all these guys,
Wiseman,
Moses Moody and James Wiseman. Kuminga. Nobody needs to hear this. But I am struck by the idea that Kevin Feige and Marvel are following something of the same blueprint.
Yeah.
Because they have had those X-Men and Fantastic Four rights for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
And if they ever felt like they really needed to pull the emergency brake to like get people to be like, I mean, you know how I felt about Reed Richards' absence from WandaVision.
We all do.
If they wanted to really, really stop the leak, not the leaking to the press, but like the gas leaking out of the tank,
mm-hmm.
they could have an X-Men or Fantastic Four.
Well, Fantastic Four is dated. It's coming out in 25.
Yes, but I mean even like they could have...
they could announce it.
Whoever it's supposed to be showing up at the end of Loki.
Well, I think... well, a couple of things. One, they absolutely should not do that at the end of Loki.
Yeah, that'd be fucked up.
They need to make movies now that feel like movies and feel like events that make people feel excited to see them and keep them.
It would
in their
be funny
movies.
If they had Adam Driver, Jake Gyllenhaal, and John Krasinski all walk out dressed as Reed Richards at the end of Loki, and it'll be like, which one of us is the real one?
Like that Black Mirror Choose Your Own Adventure episode.
Yeah.
I think it really suits Feige, regardless of the truth. It definitely suits the narrative that has emerged in all of this reporting, and Joanna's referenced this too, that he is really taking his time with this one. This has become a talking point. I think it is probably accurate, but I think it is also very good spin that even when Chapek was just like, release everything, release it all, in that now ill-fated, infamous press conference in 20 or 21, that he didn't say anything about X-Men and Fantastic Four, that he knows he has to get these right.
And when they launched Disney Plus, they were like, there will never be a time when there's not superhero content on.
but he still held those back, whatever his plans were, whatever his vision for them was, and whatever was already decided upon. In some of the reporting this week, I think even in this Variety piece, there was a throwaway line being like, now that the writer's strike is over, he's taking meetings with people about the X-Men in earnest. It's like, I feel like that probably started before the strike.
Never
Let's
occurred
hope so.
To me. Yeah.
I feel very strongly about this, and I think we said it to Joanna, not having the rights to these characters is one of the reasons why the MCU worked. Mm-hmm. And if Fantastic Four is announced as having like deep, deep connections to like the last few chapters of the Darkhold, they're fucked. Like, if you consider everything to be spun out of what already existed, you are devaluing it now without saying that it, you know, connect it later, get to Secret Wars or whatever, but make something good. I will also say, just on a personal level, Chris, I know you're resistant to joining the hottest growing social media network in the world, Facebook.
You really need to have your computer fucking thrown out the window.
But the beauty of doing this podcast with you and then logging on to check out what my high school homies are up to is that I am frequently serviced wild ass website fan castings.
Yeah.
That it just promised me
yeah.
that Jake Gyllenhaal as Reed Richards and our friend of the pod, Eben Mossbacher,
they're just
is the
waiting
thing.
For Duncan Crabtree Ireland to give them the thumbs up.
Just the one Joaquin Phoenix thumbs up, and it is go time. And by the way, I know you nerds are like, Jake was already Mysterio. Guess what, dorks? Multiversal storytelling. It's all connected.
What do you want to do? I think we should save bodies.
Let's save it for Monday. This is a show that people have been coming up to us on the street, tears in their eyes, because I think they watch Bodies, saying, sir, sir. There's a new Netflix show.
There should be a death pool about like when you'll like a show.
Why am I the bad guy in that story?
You're not.
Like, impress
you're,
me.
You're not.
Come on.
Taylor Sheridan tried.
He didn't try for me.
Andy, it was great to see you.
So Bodies on Monday.
Bodies and Loki on Monday.
And just
or if you don't want to talk about Loki, we can keep it moving. We can just discuss the Texas Rangers. We can do whatever you want.
I think that we're like Lawman Bass Reeves. Mm-hmm. I think Monday's show is going to really depend on Cowboys-Eagles results.
That's actually quite true.
It's really the only
thing
I want
to
watch.
Thank you to Kaya McMullen for her professionalism today.
Indeed.
And for this amazing room and the vibes it brought us.
And thank you to all the Hollywood dreamers out there who tune in to us twice a week and are like, man, those guys really hate everything. Just reach for the stars. Reach for the stars, kids.